Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, en podcast från Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. I den här podden samtalar vi med specialister från olika områden inom hästmedicinen. Med det gemensamt att de delar vår och din passion för hästarna. Du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna, podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och arbetar med hästar. Jag som pratar heter Maria Williamson. I det andra avsnittet med Fredrik Nielsen går han in lite mer på rehabilitering och behandling av problem i framförallt den ytliga bysenan.
Hello and welcome to the second podcast about rehabilitation of tendon and ligament injuries. My name is Gorm Carson and I'm working for Boehringer Ingelheim, and I still have the pleasant company of Fredrik Nielsen here today. He is a managing veterinarian at Højgaard Equine Clinic in Aarhus, and as mentioned before, also the team vet for the national dressage team here in Denmark. Fredrik, in our previous podcast we talked about tendon and ligament injuries in general. In this podcast, we'll focus a little bit more on injuries in the superficial digital flexor tendon, the SDFT. Could you tell me how often do you put forward this diagnosis in your group of patients?
As mentioned in the previous podcast, I predominantly work with dressage and show jumpers. I must say that if we will just call it SDFT, that's a little bit faster. Otherwise, I'll get tripped by the words.
So would I.
It's not for sure among tendon and ligament issues. It's for sure not the most common one that I see. I would say among the dressage horse, there is a tendency, which is, I cannot find the 100% reason for it, that I see more and more mid-canon SDFT lesions in the lateral part. And I have the feeling that within the years that I've been working is that it's getting more and more common. And I cannot biomechanically 100% understand why we see these. I think some of them might be due to some conformation issues of the legs, causing that you have more strain on that lateral aspect. But that's the thing I for sure see more and more. I think if you compare it to race horses, where you see some of these really classical core lesions, of course I see them, but I see them less frequent. And then there's a last group of SDFT lesions that I see, and that's more in the older horses that you see in the proximal canon region, where you get that they are more, they can have real core lesions, but then also a more just general thickness and a more heterogenic appearance of the tendon. Those I see as well, but as I said, more in the older horses, where I think just aging means a lot.
Yeah, and mainly in dressage horses, or
Well, for sure, the show jumpers, they also have more of the SDFT lesions. I think they can have more of the core lesions as well.
Yeah,
but the aging one and the older one there, I see in both show jumpers and dressage.
Okay. I know it's difficult to generalize, but if we take the scenario with a case where you have diagnosed a core lesion of the SDFT in a 7-year-old, let's say 140-150 centimeter show jumper, how would you proceed with your rehabilitation of this horse?
It's actually a good point of already saying that already now that I've diagnosed, the rehab starts, because actually that's true. I think in the past we have been looking at, you know, there's a, when you've diagnosed it, then there's a period where you treat it, and then once it's healed, then you start rehab.
Yeah.
And I think that's not correct, because as we already, we know as humans and as athletes for sure, human athletes for sure, as soon as you get an injury, you start some degree of rehab.
Yeah.
Of course, we have some difficulties in, we have a limitation of which kind of exercises we can do with horses compared to humans.
Yeah.
For sure, unless if we are talking fractures and detrimental injuries, walk exercise starts immediately.
Yeah.
But of course, if we first take the therapeutic aspect, of course, there are a lot of considerations about what should we do treatment-wise regarding a core lesion in a 7-year-old horse here. And there are different aspects of the treatment. There are, of course, medical options.
Mm-hmm.
We have some other options like laser, light treatments, magnetic treatments. At the first phase, not to forget spa, cold water spa to prevent further enlargement of the injury, decrease the inflammation a bit, and for sure also, and in my opinion, also very important thing is also shoeing, trimming, how we trim the feet, how we shoe them in order to decrease loading on the tendon that's injured. So there are a lot of different therapeutic aspects to be addressed. The main topic here is more so the rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a part for sure in the equine sport that has been lacking for many years, but now since some years now is increasing focus on it. And there's no doubt that it starts already here at the initial phase just with walk exercises. Try to keep the horse in general, also the holistic aspect of the horse, to keep it as fit as possible during this period, because if I don't think you can prevent that, of course, a top fit horse here, which will have a prolonged period without written work, that it will for sure have some losing a bit of its muscle mass.
Of course.
But the more muscles and the more gymnastic you can keep the horse, the easier it will also be for the horse to go through a rehab.
Yeah.
So the old version of just leaving the horse in the field, doing nothing, making the horse losing all its muscles, being completely stiff and not even moving, because we know a part of the healing of a tendon or ligament issue is also it, healing is promoted by stimulation, and stimulation is caused by a controlled exercise. So in walk exercise, you're not just walking in order to keep the rest of the body good. You're also walking the horse in order to stimulate healing of the tendon injury.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important to start early with it. And for sure, we are then also, so my first thought, or my first thing about rehab part would be to do for sure written or walk exercise.
Does it matter to you if it's hand walked or written walk?
For me, it's the most important is a bit the temperament of the horse.
Yeah.
Because I think, so the question whether you have a 600 kilo horse mm-hmm. walking, or you have a horse with a saddle and a rider, so it's maybe 670 or 80 kilo. I don't think, I mean, it's a very little percentage compared to, so for me, that's not the big difference.
No.
So it's more a question about how is the horse most controlled?
Yeah.
And I talk with the riders, because this is really important. I don't think as a vet, I cannot know the answer of this. So I need to talk. And there over time, I see that some riders, they have the experience that some horses, if you sit on top of them, they expect that they are supposed to work more.
Yeah.
So then they are more hot.
Okay. So some of them would actually be easier managed from the ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there are a lot of horses that if they are, let's say, equally fresh walking by hand and on the rider, the advantage for sure, in my opinion, with a rider on top is that if the horse gets a little bit fresh, it will go straight forward.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have it on the hand, on the lunge or on the rope, your first, if it starts to jump forward, you will turn it around and it will do short turns.
Yeah.
And for sure, that's not a thing that's ideal for a horse that's having injuries. So therefore, often actually, I would prefer normally that it's on the rider. Also because then you can, as a rider, even if you ride big circles, you can keep some degree of gymnasticity of the horse.
Yeah.
But I normally see that most horses cope better with walk on the rider, in my experience. But if the rider experiences that the horse is too hot when you ride it, they can do it.
They can do it from the ground.
Yeah.
But perhaps actually, we talked about in the first podcast about motivation of the rider as well. Perhaps it is easier for the rider to be sitting on top of his or her horse doing these walks than being on the end of a rope walking around in the riding school.
For some riders, for sure. I also have some clients where they actually then say, okay, but then I walk with the horse myself just by hand because then I also get a little bit of exercise.
Yeah.
Some
true.
Clients say that as well. And some say, yeah, then we are on top because then it's easier. I don't need to walk that much. And also, as I said, we can do some gymnastics of the horse.
Yeah.
So we can keep the horse in a better place from a biomechanical point of view.
So basically you play it by ear and take one horse at a time and one rider at a time and do the rehab program as in the beginning at least from a very subjective viewpoint.
That's actually a tricky part about the whole rehab is that I think if we go to a lot of other parts, so the treatment and in veterinary world, we're used to go into science and then we are going into statistics and do the most science-based options.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go from a more, you have a general aspect. You have a bunch of, in a study, you have a bunch of horses who were treated with this and this,
yeah.
And group A did better than group B.
Yeah.
So you recommend your clients to do as they did in group A.
Yeah.
But the issue with the rehab, and that was also a tricky part for me. I did actually, that's now some years ago, actually probably many. I can't remember when it was. I went to Florida and I did a rehab course over there at a rehab facility where we were for, first we did the online part and then we were there for 2 weeks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal when I went there was I had the goal from home. I had a on my list that I needed when I came home. I wanted a plan for a rehab for a STFT injury, for a DDFT injury, for a suspensory injury, and so on, and for joint injury, and for sacroiliac pain, and so on. I wanted standardized because that was easy to bring them back for the hospital then to implement and use.
Print it out and hand it out to the owners. Easy.
Yes, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and now I also understand it more and more, but when I did, I was still relatively young back then also, and then they just kept saying when I asked, and they were kept saying, but you cannot do standardized rehab programs because each plan needs to be adjusted to the individual horse and the individual owner.
Yeah.
And now the more that I've worked with it on my own in the daily work, unfortunately, I agree more and more that it is really individual plans because each horse is different, each owner is different, each facility where the horse is placed is different. So it's really difficult to have, of course, you can have standard things that you want the horses to do, but it needs to be adjusted to each specific patient.
Yeah,
I think that's very important, but also very tricky because it makes it much more there's much more work in it for us as vets because then it would be easy if we could just, go to the suitcase and pick up a page for SDFT injury and then hand that out to the owner and say, now you do
this and come back.
I come back in 4 weeks and we check it again and then everything is fine. That would be much easier. But unfortunately, I think it will not be able to do that because it is so dependent.
Yeah. It doesn't work like that. And so, how frequently would you like to see, if we take the above mentioned horse, how frequent would you like to see it for follow-up exams?
So if we say here's a SDFT coalition, so in the first part, there will probably be done quite some therapeutic approaches in the start.
Yeah.
And there might be interesting to see it a little bit more frequently than maybe in the later on. So often in the first period, I see it. Ideally, I see it every 2 to 4 weeks to see how the healing. Because at the first part, if we go back to whole tendon ligament healing processes, so I divide them into three processes. First, you have the cleaning up phase, where you there are torn ligament fibers or tendon fibers, and they need to be destroyed and moved away.
Yeah.
So you kind of have a cleaning up process. That's for just the first short period. And then you go into the second part. That's you need to have ingrowth of new fibers to fill out the injury. And that's, you can follow quite well. And then you need to have that last part, which is the remodeling phase. And in the first two parts, ultrasonographically, you can follow them really well, because you will first have a completely, if it's a real core lesion, you'll have a completely anechogenic area.
Yeah.
Core lesion, only fluid, because the fibers are torn and you have some degree of inflammation, which causes fluid, maybe some bleeding as well. So you will just have it a fluid hole inside.
Yeah.
And then you can gradually follow first the cleaning up, that it's it can sometime actually elongate the injury a little bit along the course of the tendon. And then later on that you have the, you can visualize with ultrasound that you have ingrowth of new fibers. And in that period, it's quite easy to follow ultrasonographically. So in that period, I find it very rewarding to follow them to see that you are on the
right path.
On a
regular basis.
Yes. Yeah. Also because if you, let's say after a month, you don't have any progression, if you had waited for 2 months and you would be at the same place, why not just after 1 month? If you don't have any positive progression, you need to reevaluate, what have I done so far? I'm not satisfied with the response. I need to do something else.
Yeah.
And that's important. And there, if I would not do the check until after 2 months, I would lose a month already
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So, of course, this is also a little bit depending on the owner. And so now I'm talking about the ideal, what I would prefer. But of course, it's also depending on how frequent does the owner want me to check it? Because of course, there's also economic aspects as well. But normally I would say every 2 to 4 week in the first period.
The initial phase.
And then as we go further on, it's maybe more than every 4 to 6 week.
Okay.
As a general rule.
Yeah.
And that's for, so the first, what is then the first part? That's until I consider the injury to be completely filled with new tissue, new tendon or ligament tissue. And then, so till that point, it's every 2 to 4 weeks. Maybe it's more in the just first part, every 2 weeks. And then every fourth week until we have reached complete healing with new tissue. And then after that point, it tends to be then more every 4 to 6 weeks that we do a check to see that we don't have relapses, problems going in the wrong direction, so that we can, because that's again, if you then wait 3 months to see the horse and then you have deterioration of the healed tissue, it would have been better to catch it already after only 4 or 6 weeks.
So ideally, you would like to see it on shorter time periods than longer.
For sure, there we can catch more of those going in the bad direction if we see them sooner than later. But of course, it is, as I said, dependent on the owner's wishes as well.
Yeah. Just out of interest, is on the border of this the topic today, which is actually rehab. But in the initial phase, what do you do? Do you use non-steroidals, or do you just let the horse be on its own without medical treatment? I know that some of our colleagues are discussing whether it's an advantage to use non-steroidals in this initial 2 weeks phase right after the happening of the injury. What do you do? Or what do you, would you recommend?
So normally when we see the very acute, as we are speaking about now, first of all, what I really see as a real advantage is the cold water spa. I really see that as a, it's really giving me a good good responses. I think that we decrease the amount of injury, that it's not enlarging too much, and we decrease the inflammation in a good way. So that's really a thing that I try to do as much as possible and get the owners to do. They are more and more, at least here in Denmark, you have more and more facilities with cold water spas.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases where maybe the cold water spa is not possible, icing, going back to the old physiotherapy, cold water, cold warm, therapy.
Yeah.
I really believe in that. The discussion about non-steroidals or not. Honestly, it depends a little bit on the degree of swelling, inflammation also in the tissue around, and also the pain of the horse.
Course.
If the horse is very painful, so let's say it's such a big injury that it's even lame at walk, I do put it on non-steroids. Yeah. I put it on then meloxicam more. I don't go for some of the more stronger NSAIDs like Flunixin, but I go for meloxicam normally for those. But if, let's say, it's a case where I see it, let's say, normally I don't see it just after the injury. So if, let's say, I see it 5 days after, they have already been icing it for a period. And when I see it, it's walking completely normal. It's a true core lesion, but I don't have a lot of peritendinous swelling around. I don't necessarily put them on NSAID.
Okay.
So it's a little bit depending on the pain of the horse and the degree of inflammation also around the tendon.
Yeah.
In those where I have a lot of inflammation or a lot of pain, then I put them on NSAID as well.
It makes good sense to me. What criteria do you, when you see these horses, you probably have been mentioning it already, but when you see these horses with core lesions in the SDFT for control follow-up exams, what do you use as criteria for going on to the next level of rehab? Is that, you've mentioned you don't really use standardized lists anymore, but is that completely by playing by ear, or have you got any list in your head, something you would like to see, something you would like to tick off before proceeding?
So it's always depending on the combination of the clinical exam and the ultrasonographic exam and the findings. So for sure, some of the important. I don't start trot before the horse is at least 90% sound. In some cases, I have in, let's say, maybe not so much for the SDFT, but more for the suspensory ligament issues, we have that some of them, even when they have healed quite well on the ultrasound, that they are maybe not still 100% sound, but have just a mild few steps a little bit off. But then very important with the suspensory is that it's normally only when the leg is to the outside on the circle. So then I can sometimes start them with a little bit of trot on the straight line and the circle where it's sound. So that can just, and that can actually sometimes in my experience help the last healing to go on. But then it's only, you need to be careful and you need to know your clients and your patients, and then you can do. And if I start that in a situation where it's not 100% sound, I keep the intervals of recheck really short. And I only say then, okay, very little bit of trot on the straight line and the circle. So, but if we go to the most standardized, then of course I want to have it sound by the time that I start do trots. And that's one of my criteria. And then, of course, it's not enough that it's sound, but also that it's ultrasonographically fine. Because some of these tendon injuries, we see that they can be sound before ultrasonographically the tendon is fit to start work again.
Yeah.
And how do you assess that? Yeah, then that's, of course, for me, a little bit the question about whether the area that was injured seems to be completely filled with new tissue, and whether how heterogenic that seems. And I don't think there's a, I think unfortunately there is a subjective assessment at that point, how you progress there. Of course, there has been this, we don't use it, but on the market there is this UTC tendon scanner where you, there you can have some assessment of the fiber quality. And those who use it a lot, I know they use that very much for the rehab in order to guide them. When can we do more work?
Yeah.
So that's an option. I've never used it. I rely much on my ultrasonographic findings, combined with the clinical findings.
Yeah.
And not only whether the horse is sound or not, also whether it's painful at pressure and also the, peritendinous swelling, how much has that gone down? So there are more aspects to the assessment. And I know it would have been nice if I could just, you know, make straight criteria for when to go on, but it is really difficult and it is so individual for each horse. I hope this makes sense, but it's difficult to make really strict criteria.
Yeah, makes good sense. So one of the hard questions, but one that's at least was top of mind for my old clients is, when can you turn this horse out to a small paddock, let's say 10 times 10 meters?
Yeah. And that's, I get asked that every time as well. and fair, because, and for me, it's again, like with the written, the walk exercise written or by hand, it's so dependent on the horse.
Yeah.
So actually often at the initial phase, I often have to talk with the owner, how is this horse? Because of course there's a big difference whether it's a 4-year-old horse, which in the paddock will run around, mm-hmm. or it's a 13-year-old horse, which is really calm and they know in the paddock, as long as they feed it out there with hay, it's really easy going. Because if it is a horse that is, let's say in 99% of the time calm.
Yeah.
I actually often find it better to keep it going in the paddock during the whole period. Because mm-hmm. for sure, one thing I think we all see that is that if you stop having the horse in the paddock and then start again, that start period when it starts to come out again, that's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Where it will be running, over happy, bucking around. So if you keep them in the same routines as they are used to, normally, in a general perspective, they will be more calm.
Yeah.
So if it is a horse that when it comes to my clinic and I do the diagnosis and I say, okay, it's having a core lesion in the SDFT, it has been, this is a rather acute case, but let's say it's 5 days after it happened. Mm-hmm. In the past 5 days, they have actually had it in the paddock because it's a quiet horse. I tend to then continue with that.
Yeah, let it stay up there.
Yeah. But of course, in the other hand, if it's a young horse that's really wild and they say for sure, okay, if we put this out, it will jump around.
Yeah.
Then I would, and I know it's not ideal for maybe the welfare of the horse and all this, but I would find it necessary to keep the horse more restricted because the horse is simply not able to do what is needed for the injury.
No.
So we need to keep it more strict and we need to keep it at box. But then, of course, it's again then the question about, because the horse needs to be come out of the box and do other things. But then it's, and that makes it more demanding for the owner, because then the horse needs to be exercised by hand or under rider more times a day.
Yeah.
And that is tricky for some owners to do.
Yeah.
But that will be the important part, is that if we say the horse cannot go in the paddock, that the horse is not standing in the box for 23 and a half hours during the day and then only walk for half an hour. But it needs to, in best, you have it out 3-4 times during the day.
Yeah.
I know for private owners who are having a work, it's not possible. But we need to find then the best possible solution. That's also a little bit about the rehab part. It's often a compromise. You need to find a realistic plan. It's better when you talk with the owners that they also are completely honest and say, hey,
this works, this doesn't work.
Yes. Yeah. And then you, from the start, you make a realistic plan.
Yeah.
So it's possible for the owner to follow through.
Yeah.
I think we all know, we have all had, I mean, I've had injuries where I've been to a physio and then one asked me to do 20 exercises during the day and I barely got to do one.
Yeah.
And then another one was realistic and said, okay, these are the 4 important ones.
Yeah.
Do these 4.
Yeah.
And then it was more, and then I actually got to do the 4 because
yeah.
it was more realistic.
Yeah.
But even with the one with the 20, I didn't do more than 1. So I think if you make the plan realistic, it also is more easy for the owner, the rider, the groom to follow the plan.
Yeah. Okay. It seems like the bottom line here is that you can not make a standardized plan for all the SDFT patients. You have to play it by ear and look at the horse and the age of the horse and the temperament of the horse and the owner as well and the surroundings. So you put everything into play and make the best possible plan for the individual horse.
Indeed, yeah. And now we have not even talked about there are more. So when we come to the rehab, since luckily it's been a bigger focus in the equine world, we now have a lot of facilities offering, you know, the water, cold water spa is one thing, but also the water treadmill, mm-hmm. normal treadmill, facilities where you do proprioceptive training, walkover poles and all these stuff. And that's all really good things, but of course needs to be, it's very important for the owners to talk to the vets about it and the vets to go into the talk with the owners. So because otherwise, if we don't talk about it as vets, what I see is that the owners, they just do what they find good.
Yeah.
And they just want to do what's best for the horse.
Yeah.
But sometimes they maybe choose, if they are not advised in an open environment there and it's not talked about, it tends to, that they sometimes do some things where you in hindsight would say, okay, this is maybe not ideal. Not blaming the owner, but just, unfortunately, there, and I've had that as my, I have that also that apparently I have not been talking enough with them about it. And it's also sometimes a question about finding the time for it.
Yeah.
But we have many options during the rehab and we should use it, but use it in a wise manner. And then it's also very important to try to be in good community. If they go to rehab facilities, that you have really good contact with those places, because it's also important for them to be, to know exactly what is the injury.
Yeah.
In which part of the rehab are we? Are we, where are we in the healing part of the tendon, or are we in the remodeling part? Or because then, and then talk with them about which kind of exercise would be good, what might be too hard. And luckily, most of these facilities, in my experience, they are very open-minded and want to talk.
Yeah.
And that's very important, to be open mm-hmm. and involve the whole group, around the horse. I mean, we are one part, we are the vet, but the owner, the rider, the groom, the farrier, the physio, the chiropractor, the rehab part. It's all the big circle, and I know this is just, it sounds flashy to say, but it is truly a teamwork effort that needs to be put in to have the most ideal healing, the most proper rehab. I don't say it's easy, and it takes time and a lot of talk, but it's very important to reach the final perfect outcome, to have the horse back in the sport, not just for a short period, but for a long period.
Makes good sense. You just mentioned the farrier before. Have you got any preferences when it comes to therapeutic shoeing and STFTs?
Just the theoretic part is that for sure, if we look to theory, what you would like to do, but it's also very dependent on the toe axis of the horse. So, mm-hmm. but normally you would try to have the lowered in the heels. And not necessarily by trimming, but then by a shoe which has a wide toe and narrow branches, which in the soft tissue, but only in soft tissue. So this will only have an effect on the soft tissue, will make the foot sink in more in the heels, causing that you have more tension on the DDFT, which is going all the way down to the pedal bone. Then as you have more tension on that tendon, which is not the tendon that's injured, so okay, you're overloading that, but you do that in a sound tendon, then since that's more on the tension, then that will bear more of the weight of the fetlock when the fetlock drops down.
Yeah.
And since the DDFT is taking more of the load, you will have less load on the SDFT and the suspensory ligament.
Yeah.
So theoretically, that would be my corrective shoe that I would choose. It's in most cases called a suspensory shoe.
Yeah.
Because it was predominantly made for suspensory ligament, but works also for SDFT lesions. But it's very important again here, that we look at the specific case, because if the horse is already, let's say, very low in its heels and getting this injury, I don't think it adds forcing the heels even more down. No. So it's very important that you look at the foot. And most of these corrective shoeings are made for horses with a normal toe axis and with a good foot, because also the quality of the horn is also very important when we talk corrective shoeing. Maybe not. That's maybe more if we go, let's say, I do a small jump here. I hope it's okay. If we have a DDFT injury often we want to have either wide branches or even a close shoe in the hind, in the palmar aspect, to have this part, the heels, more elevated in the soft tissue. But if you do wide branches or a close shoe in the hind, you need to be sure that the bars of the foot are strong enough to handle that. Because if the bars are then of bad quality and you put these kinds of shoes on, you're just destroying the bars completely. Yeah. And you're not adding then you're not getting the proper response in the foot itself, in the horn quality. Then you're actually just destroying the foot. And then it's not a good choice. So it's very important when we go to corrective shoeing also. And again, to have a very good dialogue with the farrier.
Yeah.
And to have a look, and I can be completely critical of myself in the past. I was more just, you know, I did the diagnosis, then I went to the book, and then I said, this is how we need to shoe it.
This is ideal. Yeah.
And I forgot to look at the horse and see how is the toe axis, how is the conformation of the leg, and how is the quality of the foot. And that's, I think, very important before just changing the shoeing, that you need to have a look at that.
Yeah. Makes good sense. So, ideally, if we go back to the before mentioned 7-year-old show jumper with the coalition of the SDFT, in the ideal world, if everything works out as it's supposed to, what's the shortest period you would look at before this horse would start competing again?
It's always a tricky question. It's always asked by the rider. They always ask, when can I compete again?
Yeah.
And I think the time, I think if you look at literature, let's say a big coalition, you're talking a year, because you need maybe 6 to 9 months for the healing and then a slow rehab. So it takes 9-12 months before you're back to normal level. I must say that I do believe that we, with the advances that we have in the diagnosis, in the diagnostic imaging follow-up, and also the some of the more modern medical options that we are having to treat it, and the good rehab, I do believe that we are able to short down this period more now than if you just look at the literature. I think we have more of these cases, not for all cases, and it depends, of course, on the size of the injury. We say it's a coalition, but it's the core, is it 10% of the cross-sectional area, or is it 50%? Of course, that means a lot on the time for it to heal, because the healing phase, of course, if it's a smaller injury, the healing phase is quicker than if it's a bigger injury.
Makes sense.
Everything is dependent on it is completely individual. But I would say that in general, I have the feeling that we are, with the advances, therapeutic-wise, rehab-wise, that we do see that some cases we bring back sooner to the sport than we did in the past.
Yeah, that's good. Well, thanks, Frederik, and let's close it with that. And in the next podcast, we'll just look a little bit about on the suspensory ligament and the differences between the superficial digital flexor tendon and the suspensory ligament.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, glöm inte att trycka prenumerera i din podcast-app så att du inte missar några avsnitt. Berätta också gärna om vad du tycker genom att ge en recension. Vi tar gärna emot tips på kommande gäster och ämnen, och våra kontaktuppgifter finns i poddens beskrivning.